Right now, beautiful, beautiful. It's beautiful here in New York City. It's very nice. Astoria, Queens, where all dreams are made of. They're all made in Queens. All dreams. Some nightmares. A lot of nightmares, but dreams too. I have a good guest on. My guest is Harry Trajanian, and Harry's a comic. He won the Andy Kaufman Award, which is like a I don't know. It's a cool award. I mean, a lot of people have won it that are prestigious. It is a prestigious award of comedy, and Harry's won it. But lately, what Harry's known for is Harry is a co-host of the Beige Phillips Show, which is hosted by Dante Nero, who's been on the show, and he's on that. And also, Harry and I are really good friends. In fact, we're such good friends, I would call him even one of my best friends, if not my best friend, the best friend of best friends. Also, I don't have many friends, so I don't know if that's flattering to Harry or if it's more of like a, hey, well, I'm the tallest midget scenario. That's just a train. Ignore that. That's just my life behind me. Fucking great. So, Harry is an interesting dude, and we recorded this when we were on the road together in Hartford, Connecticut. I headline City Steam Comedy Club, and as well, if many of you know, because I promote it, and usually if usually I bring Harry with me, and it's really fun because, you know, not only is Harry my good friend, but we have a couple laughs together. Plus, he kind of keeps me on the up and up. It's hard to be away from home, and we all know I have certain issues, and even though I am on the good track for a long time now, it is nice to have someone that is there. I'm a lone wolf, folks, so I do my hunting alone. It's better to have someone with me. That being said, during this trip, Harry was very down in the dumps, down in the mouth, and indirectly kind of made me kind of down and out. I was already down and out a little bit, and we kind of, that first night, we were a little, you know, out of it, and then once we did this podcast, this show, some stuff came out, and it was actually really nutritional, not only for the relationship, but also for me. Because we got to jump into some things that, you know, you really get to talk about, especially with the other guy. I mean, it's just, the podcast lets people put aside the fact that they're two guys hanging out, two guys, and talk about their emotions maybe, you know? So this is a really special episode for me because I get to talk to a good friend of mine, but also I think we kind of figure some shit out along the way. So I hope you enjoy it. I got a special episode for everybody out there today. Welcome to the show, by the way, Josh Ricardo. I'm assuming you know me. If you don't, okay, thanks for listening, I guess. I'm in a weird mood. I'm in a weird place. Not a bad place, just a weird place. I think I'm like that because when I go on the road, I'm in Hartford right now, I'm in a hotel room, and I'm headlining City Steam with my boy who's here with me, and we decided to do a special show for you. Mr. Harry Trajanian. Harry, my brother.
Hey, man. What's going on?
You're my brother. You're my brother.
You're my brother, too. I love you, brother.
I love you, brother.
I love you, brother.
You're my brother, and I love you. So, I think the reason why I feel like a little...
You feeling weird? I'm feeling weird.
Well, you feel weird all the time, though.
Yeah, that's true. But today, the last 2 days especially, I feel weird.
But why?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking forward to this for sure, and we still had fun. We're still having fun, but I am in a weird, like, the drive up here was no treat somehow.
But do you think that's what it was, though?
I don't, it's not a great start, you know what I mean? It's like...
I sometimes get confused about your, not emotions, but maybe your flow.
Right.
Because, I guess because I look at things from a I try to look at them from all points of view, but I fail a lot of the time.
Sure.
So when I think like on this kind of thing where we're doing a gig together,
yeah,
we're making money,
yeah,
and it's like, hey, we're hanging, we're already really good friends, we're like, yeah, best friends, and we're hanging out,
How can that not be at least a foundation to build some positivity on?
Well, the way I look at it, imagine how bad it would be if it wasn't us hanging out. If it was,
I do a lot of road gigs, and they're fucking lonely. I mean, here's the thing. I think so. People who are listening that aren't comics are aspiring comics. I don't work anywhere near like a famous man works, but I work often enough to know what the road's about, and the allure rubs off very quick. And when you're on the road, you're like, okay, the cool part is I'm alone, and then the shitty part is you're alone.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And now I have someone with me, and I feel great right now. I feel pretty good. We had a fun night last night.
Yeah, we did have fun.
We ended up going out after the show. A bunch of crowd members took us out. Bachelorette parties, all these women. And women not like, but you're engaged, Josh. Not women like I'm finger banging them or something like that. It's a friendly environment, and it's no one that's a threat or that we brought home. It wasn't anything like that. I mean, I've had those nights, which are great nights. Mm. But it was a fun night where we're in a town where there really isn't much going on, and we are what's going on, you know? We're, like, hanging out. So waking up this morning, I felt like, cool, I'm on the road. You know, I was looking forward to going to the pool. And of course, New England weather is dog shit, so it's, like, supposed to be sunny, and now it's raining.
It's pouring terribly.
Do you think...
Every time we come here, it pours.
It does, right?
Last year, yeah, same shit. Last year was, like, same thing. I think it was around the same time. It was probably about a year ago. Same time, June. And it was, like, freezing. Couldn't even use the pool. Can't use the pool.
So why do you think, after all that we just talked about, why do you think you are feeling weird?
I don't know. That's the
Did you sickness. Not like your sets last night?
Oh, I wasn't thrilled with that either. Yeah, that's help, like a. So I don't know if it's based on that. I at this point I don't know what it's based on anymore.
Harry has a nutty schedule. I think I have my theory.
Yeah,
your sleeping patterns are so fucked.
Sure.
There is no way. I mean, because I have insomnia myself. I don't know if you do. I just know your job.
No, I don't have insomnia, but the schedule keeps me from sleeping.
So yeah. Harry has a really nutty schedule. His sleep patterns are, there is no consistency. And I think that attributes a lot to what the struggles you talk about. Sure. But you don't think it does.
I don't know. I remember I've had other jobs where I had, you know, a good sleeping pattern. It certainly doesn't make it better. But I'm not going to... There are times where it's been... I've had a normal job or whatever. You're not getting enough sleep then either.
But I'm saying, like, it's one thing to just not be a good sleeper, because I'm not a good sleeper. It's another thing where you're forced day in and day out to go, well, fuck, I got 3 hours of sleep last night, because I still have in-the-day responsibilities.
Right,
I mean, you're pursuing your career heavily.
Yeah.
So you have in-the-day responsibilities. I mean, if you guys don't know Harry, he's on a very popular podcast called The Beige Phillips Show. And he's basically like the anchor behind it with Dante Nero, who's a friend of the show here, where he's not only like the guy who's putting things together, he's your talent, co-host, part engineer. I mean, you have a lot of hats, man.
With that, yeah.
And then, like, you know, so Harry, I get in his car, and he's like, you know, we had to push back our meeting up time because... You fucking got 2 hours of sleep the previous night.
Yeah.
So you're like, fuck, everything, my whole day was shot.
Yeah, the whole thing from that. And so then I was hoping to get here, take a nap or whatever. Mm-hmm. We got stuck in New England traffic. It was brutal.
But what I'm saying is that I think like that already is a bad start.
Yeah, that's
You can
a
never have
start.
A good start right, if yeah. that's how you sleep.
I mean, you're right. In all fairness, you know, that's a shitty start. I kind of forget about that. That might have a lot to do with it. Yeah, that's probably...
It's like the breakfast is the most important meal of the day type of thing. I mean...
Yeah, and I absolutely get none of it. You know, I just...
It's 2 hours of sleep.
And the thing is, though, I now have gotten into my head that it's normal to do that.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because you keep going, it's so normal for you now... That you don't think it's a problem. When
you're
like
kind of wonder, whoa, what's
you don't even
going
look
on,
at it anymore. Yeah. We're like, that's the fucking first piece of the stone to be put on the street. It's jagged and crooked.
And then I'm wondering, why is the street so
God,
uneven?
Why is my lower back hurt?
Yeah, I don't understand.
I'm literally walking. I'm imitating walking. No one can see you, but Harry.
Why? I can't ride my bike on this. I don't understand why.
God, it's on. Oh, I'm looking at my bike.
Why do I have a jagged rope? Why do you feel bummed?
I don't feel bummed at all. Yesterday I just was sick. Here's what got me yesterday. Yesterday, I've been doing decently well the last 3 months of accepting Christ. Challenges.
Christ
has gotten me nowhere. Sorry if you're religious out there. I'm glad you find solace in that, but I don't. but for me, it was like...
accepting what? Whatever you're accepting.
Accepting challenges. To go a little bit deeper into it, I'm a guy that obviously on the show talks a ton about being in therapy, and it's taken 10 years now for me to actually get to a certain breakthrough where the challenges in front of me I'm not irritated by.
Right.
Like the acceptance of traffic or acceptance of, oh, well, this person's being an asshole. Or, I mean, all these things that before would take me out of my game. Also, competing. I'm in a really competitive business.
Sure.
I played sports in college and never really enjoyed competition. And now I kind of thrive on competition. I really like seeing other comics, and if they do well, I kind of want to follow. Like, not that I didn't want to follow them before, but I would make myself.
Revel in the
now
idea.
I'm like, oh yeah, let's do it. I hope he's really good. I'd love to fucking smoke that guy or whatever. Now it's like a fun thing. So that being said, yesterday, the reason why I was kind of like in the murk is because I drank a lot the night before.
Thursday night.
This is becoming like a problem. I don't know about like an alcoholism problem necessarily, but
well, no one ever thinks it's a no one.
It's probably like you're sleeping.
You just think it's normal.
I think it's normal. Just, like Harry thinks it's normal to sleep.
I just drank right up until I passed out in the bed.
See, I don't do that though.
Yeah, I know, but
like I hold it together pretty well. And the thing is, when it comes to drinking, because my sex addiction is not as strong as it used to be, I think some parts of it have been replaced by power drinking.
Oh, jeez.
Like, because I'm hanging around with this dude. I'm not going to say his name because you guys might know him. I don't know if he wants it out there. I'm sure he doesn't care. He talks about everything, but I'm just going to be diplomatic.
It's
not my place. And him and I hang out a lot. I live in the same neighborhood, and he loves to drink. He loves to drink. And, not drink like we go drink and puke in a barrel and punch each other in the face. Like, drink like a fun night of drinking, like a guy who's 35 would drink, that has a job and a wife and a career. Fun time.
Because
I can't fuck anybody anymore but my chick, which is great.
You're taking away it the way you say it.
It used to be a sport.
Because I'm stuck just fucking the one bro, the love of my life. But, you know, so you got that to deal with.
So I'm out there, I mixed a lot of different kinds of drinks. Usually I'm straight vodka. And I mixed a lot of different kinds of drinks. And then the next day I woke up not feeling 100%, which bothers me because I'm very in tune lately with my body and what it's doing. And I put myself at a fucking disadvantage. And then I get in Harry's car and my stomach's acting crazy. I end up having the trots during the ride, which didn't make it fun. But I think we feed off each other.
You, negatively or positively?
I think either or.
Really? Interesting.
I think I know I do. I know if someone that I'm really close to is not feeling great, I feel a responsibility to make them feel great. And I don't know why I have that. I just don't know. I know why I had it in the beginning.
Called compassion.
I guess. But in the beginning of my life, it was more like ego, I guess, or insecurity, like I want people to have fun around me.
Right.
Now it's compassion. It's like because I hate us complaining about shit.
Right.
And I realize, as a comic, I'm sure you feel this way sometimes as well. You can make complaining really funny.
Oh sure, yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it's like, and it's hysterical. We forget sometimes, like, oh, this is, even though this is really funny, I'm bitching a lot.
Yeah, I've really tried to put the kibosh on that a lot, just of me bitching and moaning, and just at some point, it's a weird balance, because I'm aware of what I'm searching for, which is like a happiness, a level of like calmness, and bitching
like
about
sustainability, happiness, right? And not like that, oh my god, I just won the lotto, or I just got booked on Letterman type of thing, but that actual everyday, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, it's a weird balance, because this stupid career will make you think that those things matter, which, logically, I've seen enough people and heard enough people say that all those things don't make you any happier or less happy.
And I really believe they don't.
I don't think they do either. However, I have not figured. I understand the logic of that. I am still annoyed about things. Like, I understand the logic of quit bitching about this. It's not going to make you happy. But I'm not there in that place where I'm just, I can let that stuff go yet. So, but every once in a while I have to kind of, even today, like I had to kind of remind myself, like, you know, you're bitching and you're moaning about stuff. And there's people right now, as we speak, in who are dealing with genocide. Like, as we speak, have mm-hmm. to worry about their village being invaded by people with machetes and automatic weapons and people being killed for their race and religion. Just, you're like, yeah, so what? I'm a struggling comedian. Like, okay, I have running water. Like, you just gotta, like,
I think,
tough it out. But it's easier said than done in a weird
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I think it's hard silly. To, when we compare, like, I know for me, I get why people don't take, when you go, well, there's a lot of people starving, which is true, but because you don't understand that, you don't deal with that every day, it's not in your face, like,
sure.
You know? So I think that is a good way to look at anything. That puts stuff in a lot of perspective, but I think people have a hard time connecting to that because their head's so far up their ass. I mean, at the end of the day, how many people that I encounter that are starving, that are this, that are that? Not many. So it's hard to go, well, I could be starving right now. Yeah, yeah, and I could be fucking Superman right now. Like, that's what it kind of
sure.
feels like sometimes.
Sure.
But so what for me, what helps, I'm by no means above what you're saying about the struggling
yeah.
part. But what has helped me recently is just being like, there are like 12 guys that I look at now that have really made it in my eyes, that are doing good work.
Yeah.
A lot of other people that have more than me, they don't have more than me. And finally, I'm really understanding this and truly believing it at my core because they're better than me. They have more because of luck.
Financially,
because and a lot of
yeah.
them work really hard. I'm not saying that. But a lot of them had a lot of luck,
right.
a lot of work. We're in an industry where we're in a society where the middle class is basically eliminated.
Right.
Where there isn't an, we talked about this on the ride up, which was really interesting, where you brought up. We were talking about bands like Bruce Springsteen, all these great bands, the
oh,
Beatles,
yeah, yeah.
how it, you could sustain a meager existence but still be able to food
until
and clothe
you
yourself
thing, yeah.
and stick with your art. You
how
don't have
bands,
that option.
How many bands like just couldn't keep it going that could be like great bands like
yeah.
5 years ago, just called it quits? Like,
yeah.
Because all those bands, like even the Beatles, I mean, they would say, you know, they were starving and doing 7 shows. They'd go,
well,
they
that's
go.
That book Outliers we talked about.
Yeah.
That's they kind of bring that up. How if they didn't get that gig in Hamburg at the strip club in Germany, where the guy wanted a live band to play the whole night, they probably would not have been as great
they
as they
not
were.
Have either been great as we, or they might have not survived at some point. One of the
mm-hmm.
guys, hey man, I gotta go. You
yeah,
know, like I gotta. You know, and I wonder about that now. Like, how many people just have stopped because...
It applies to us, too.
Because
yeah. the more and more, like, do your research out there. And this is what I ask everybody who listens to this show. We need to be a part of the right revolution, and a lot of us aren't. Research the people that you think are talented, quote-unquote, and their background. And understand this. There's a whole lot of them that come from very privileged backgrounds. So make sure you watch and learn who your voice is out there that's representing you.
Mm.
Like, for example, Lena Dunham, the feminist poster woman, right, for a lot of people. Why, though? Because she's the voice of women. Why? Where's her struggle? What's the struggle that she went through that is so important to all of that? Oh, she's our voice. It's a world full with overprivilege, because to be in our industry, to do it the right way, to do it full time, you probably have someone supporting you financially. And I'm not saying that's for everybody. I realize you could hear this and take this totally out of context. I'm not saying there aren't people out there that work really hard, but what I'm saying is because of the way society's built, because of the way the economy is.
I think you're seeing less and less of that.
Yeah. The less artist, being an artist isn't a thing anymore. It's like really hard
right,
to live
yeah.
a life. Then
yeah.
you're Harry T fucking sleeping 2 hours a week because
yeah.
you're trying to also pursue comedy. It's like something has to give
yeah,
at some point.
At some point. And that's the other thing. I think, and this is to be genuinely honest, the emotion I felt, like, it probably had nothing to do with this whole weekend. It was just I kind of felt the general fear, like afraid. You know?
Afraid of what?
It's not going to work. The whole thing, like, is this, maybe I'm just not going to...
Like, big picture?
Yeah. Like, maybe I'm just not gonna make it at this. Like, it's, statistically speaking, it's not being necessarily, like, negative, like, you stink, because I know I'm good.
No,
it has nothing to
yeah.
do with that.
Yeah.
But it's sort of this thing, like, statistically speaking, you know, you can only go by the logic of what's going, the patterns. You
it's
know,
kind
you,
of futile, though, to think that way, right?
It is,
because
in a sense.
Making it is different to everybody.
Sure.
And I think you're pretty narrow-minded when it comes to making it. It's like four or five things that represent making it to you.
I don't know. Like, I couldn't narrow it down, but I know this ain't it.
Well, what's not it? Oh, like, you like working the road and not headlining, or what is it?
I just don't feel like I'm in the mix, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like I'm not in the hunt. Like, if I officially stopped doing comedy tomorrow, I don't know how many dominoes would fall. It would be affected. Like, nothing would be affected by my not doing comedy.
I see what you're saying.
Ever again.
But at the same time, I think the part that I'm finding a lot of comfort in, because I was going through a lot of the same things, and I'm not right now. And I think it's because it hit me that I had to really ask myself, why do you want to make it in the current status of comedy when I really don't like much of the stuff that's out there?
Right.
So why am I competing to be part of the masses that I don't respect a lot of your opinions? I think a lot of stuff that you're force-feeding me isn't very good, has no heart. I think a lot of you are so far behind in the race, you think you're winning. So why am I rushing to be a part of this? Why am I agonizing over not being passed at the Comedy Cellar or not being on Comedy Central if a lot of the work that's being put out I'm not a fan of?
I'll tell you, for me.
And I don't care anymore. Like, I feel good about what I'm doing. That's all I can do. And if my win, I'll let you get your thought out. If my win is I get to be a part of the right side of the fight, the right revolution, and I'm a voice in that, that's all I care about.
Right.
Period. Now. And it feels fucking incredible. And don't get me wrong, folks. I'm no dipshit. I work really hard. If Comedy Central said, hey, we want to put you on this talking head show, I'm signing the fucking contract, all right? I'm not here to speak like I'm putting my foot down. But what I'm saying is I want to do work that I want to do. If something's good, I'm going to do it. If I can make it good, I'm going to do it. Period.
For me, the thing, like, again, you're supposed to do art for the love of doing the art. And it's always a terrible thing when you do it with the idea of being financially and critically successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what you're supposed to do.
No.
It's a bad idea to go into that. The problem, I think, with comedy, especially, there is no medium anymore. Like, I don't really work as much as I'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to... I have a lot of things I want to work on. I want to do a lot of material that I want to work on, and I just don't get that opportunity because I don't have a TV spot. So I don't have a TV spot. Clubs and rooms, they don't book me as often as I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately with comedy, I think it goes hand in hand. Like, I have no desire to be famous. It's not about – I don't really have a desire to go out there
be
and,
beloved
and have
everywhere
people want to
and
take
even,
photos.
Yeah,
I don't give a shit about
that's
that.
A double-edged sword. We know that.
Right.
I mean, it's probably pretty brutal.
Yeah, I don't want to lose the privacy and all that stuff. But I also don't, I have no desire for that adulation. Like, it's fun in little bits, but of people kissing your ass for no reason, you know, that's not really what I want.
So you're saying it's basically one feeds the other.
Yeah,
you
there's
need
not
that
one without the other
to
anymore.
Work, to
not
do the
comedy,
work you
yeah.
want to do.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure we can get more creative, and we have at certain points, about doing the work we want to do without having to rely on other people to give us jobs. I mean, Harry's been a part of Dating on Set, all the sketches, you know, on screen and off screen, helping produce with me.
Yeah.
I mean, if we want to get creative, I think we can make things happen. Because I think a lot of rooms and stuff, they'll go, oh, I saw your sketch. I mean, it's a long shot, but everything's a long shot.
Yes.
But you're putting the work, like you said, if you're putting the work in that you love and you're passionate about, that's a win already.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem with comedy is, stand-up comedy anyway, is it requires a live audience. It necessitates people to be in the room. Mm-hmm. So as much as I want to go, fuck the world, well, the world is going, yeah, you could say fuck the world, it's an empty room.
You like, got to play the game. We all got to play the game.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to figure out what part of the game that we're okay with and what part we're good at. I mean, honestly, I guarantee you if we put, like we've already been talking about making other web series and putting more content out, that's the right thing to do.
Sure,
and if you can build an audience around that, and start promoting a monthly show that's a stand-up show. I mean, there are more people that were bringers and promoters of stand-up that were comics that end up now that are on TV over the last two years because they ended up running a successful show, and the show kind of gained a little bit of notoriety around New York City, and then boom, some manager says, okay, well, I'll submit you for this, and next thing you know, They're getting all the work that Harry's talking about he needs to get. Yeah. Needs to get. So the only person we can blame is ourselves because we're not being creative enough. Being a professional comic is hard when you're doing really good work because doing really good work means you got to work really hard at it. But being a known comic, all it takes is one little thing. I mean, right now we could go on the fucking Real World, you and I, and have dates booked for the next 2 years based off the fact that we're on an MTV show.
Sure, yeah.
So it's not, yeah. I mean, don't get it wrong out there. It's a possibility. It's about being, like you said, critically appreciated.
Sure, yeah.
Financially would be nice. That's the same but thing, you yeah. can't chase that shit, you know?
Yeah, because that's a, it's a, it requires a lot of luck and a lot of things to fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the other thing that's scary, is like, I'm sure there's really, there's always stories of like, so-and-so is really good, what happened to him? Oh, he just kind of stopped or whatever. He moved back up to New England.
But is that the end of the... I used to think because I was so narrow-minded and one-sided about this whole thing that this was my whole identity. If I don't become a famous comedian, the world is not right. The world would be wrong. This is like... I mean, I've been really dramatic and emotional and melodramatic sure. about my career when at the end of the day, I'm telling jokes and... Yeah, I mean, there are, what, three guys in history that have transcended this art form? There's, like, the Lenny Bruce and the Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy and Chris Carlin. Rock. I mean, these are guys that...
Couple guys, yeah.
Yeah, there's some guys out there that go, oh, okay, that's bigger than just jokes. I mean, they've...
Sure, yeah.
I mean, there's congressmen quoting Chris Rock bits. I mean, that's, you know, that's right, a right, pretty right. big deal. But at the end of the day, like, no one really thinks about me that much. As much as I would hope they would, as much as I think they might. No one probably cares as much as I care, which is obvious. Yeah. So at the end of the day, if it ends and I decide that it's not worth the hassle, I used to fear that, but I don't think there's any fear to be had. No.
I still have that fear. Well, no, the logic is sound. Again, the logic is, at the end of the day, if I'm not a successful comedian...
Then what am I?
Yeah. But the whole thing is that at the end of the day, is that so bad?
Mm-hmm.
You're still alive. You still live in you're living in a great situation. You know, I have good relationships with most of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, yeah, but I'm still really fucking bitter about it. You know, like, it's like at the end of the day, is this so bad? Again, I have the logic. I know the logic. But then there's that part of me that's just like bitter and angry. Like,
yeah,
I'm gonna be really bitter that I didn't get to make it.
I think because you look at it as if I don't make it, it's a pretty sad life. And I understand where you're coming from because I was doing something very similar fairly recently. When I looked around my life was filled with really great things outside of comedy. Yeah. And I was like, dude, why are you so angry about not getting stuff? You come from zero. I mean, people on the show, if you listen for a while, you know my background, like, I come from a very abusive childhood. I grew up really poor, not knowing really how to love. And I've obtained a lot of these things. I've traveled the world. Comedy has brought me a lot of the stuff I have. So it's kind of disrespectful for me to keep asking comedy to keep giving me things when at the end of the day, it's given me pretty much everything I have today.
Right, yeah.
In one way, shape, or form, comedy is connected to it.
I had a weird, not a catharsis, catharsis I guess is negative, but like a positive experience, which was like, it was like 2 weeks ago, I was I didn't have anything booked, so I was a little bummed, so I was out just Friday night, but I gotta go out, like, you know, even if I don't have anything booked, I make sure I go out, because you never know.
Yeah, you do work hard, man, you do pound the pavement.
So, I go out, and I run into, you know, a friend of mine, I'm not gonna give her name, because this story is personal, but she... Mm-hmm. I just ran into her, and, you know, she's a comic. We're just bullshitting or whatever while outside a club, and she's telling me about a situation where she's getting married or something, and she's got a dad who's, like, her dad was a piece of shit. Her dad was a piece of shit, not present, was also very violent towards the family and blah, blah, blah. The whole thing is it's a very negative experience, and talking about abusing her grandmother, the father that abused his mother, and so, you know, we just kind of shared. It was supposed to be like a five-minute in-passing conversation. I probably hung out with her for 45 minutes. We had a drink or two. And literally, we're like holding hands in a way, like talking about like this deep thing because it made me think about my grandfather who just kind of recently had what we thought was a stroke. He's made it out all right. So I was kind of tearing up a little bit about it. It was this very deep conversation. We hugged, and, you know, this person who I'd known, and we just that conversation, obviously, will be close forever from here on out.
It's yeah, very that was that moment.
That's
right?
A very weird moment.
Yeah,
so
that
I,
bonding
know,
moment.
So I hug, and, you know, we say, I love you. I, you know, I have no problem telling people that. I love doing that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk over, like, it's time for me to walk over. So I see a couple, you know, I see Artie Fuqua outside the cellar. I walk by there, and Artie Fuqua just, he's, I think it's been about a year or so that he's since recovered from that terrible accident he was in with Tracy Morgan, mm-hmm. where he, you know, he could have been killed. Like, he was, I don't know.
One guy was killed, yeah. I mean, that's...
One guy was killed, yeah. And Artie is doing great, and he's out there wearing a suit. And I see Artie, he's in the middle of talking, but we make eye contact, and he goes out of his way to hug each other. Like, just a nice, real, like, tight hug. And that's it, we move on. Like, hey, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. I see Pete Holmes, he's shooting his show on the corner of, he's, for whatever reason, he's doing a show about, like...
About being a...
About New York
being
comic,
a barker.
Being a New York comic.
Yeah.
So he's handing out flyers or whatever, but they don't block off. It's weird because I guess the shot is, it's supposed to be crowded, so they don't block off anybody.
Yeah.
So literally, while he's setting up, I just, I go, oh, let me say hello to Pete. I go, hey, Pete, just to wave him. And he steps out of his shot. He goes, HT! He comes and gives me a big hug. He goes, how you doing? Like, he stops doing his shot or whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't interrupt the shot, but before the setup.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just, like, hugging me and, like, hey, how you doing? And it just occurred to me, like, it's a long whatever, but, like, you know, for all the bitching that I do, this, like, all those things are because of comedy. All my friends are because of comedy.
I think you answered your question you started out the show with.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I just came full circle in the middle of this 30-minute conversation where it's, like, everything we have that's good. I mean, those are really successful people you brought up.
Yeah.
That are stopping what they're doing. They know your face.
Yeah.
You've built something with them, even if it's just for a second. You're part of a community. All the things you think you're the outside looking in.
Yeah,
I get what you mean by that. You're saying I don't know when all the auditions are being submitted for things.
I'm not in the loop.
You built these relationships. At the end of the day, those auditions are going to be there forever or not. They're going to go away.
Right.
The show's going to happen. People are going to get them, and that's it. And they probably won't be you. But that is real, what you just had.
And that's a positive moment where I was like, fuck, man, you know, for all this bitching,
mm-hmm.
all these people love me, you know. They do genuinely have an affection for me. I have an affection for them, which is like, oh, great. And like, yeah, and then, you know, an hour later, you're like, I can't believe fucking so-and-so's on stage.
You know, it's weird, right?
I can't believe fucking they're doing a half an hour. They don't got a half an hour. The fuck is this? Put me on there.
That's what's so bad about being a comic, because you're alone in this fight. We're not an improv troupe. I don't have five other people that are helping each other out, not only on stage, but off stage, right? Because we all got the common goal.
Yeah, but that's a disaster, too.
Well, I mean, everything's a disaster, but
it's
not as much of a disaster as when you're a lonely, embittered person that goes around going, why not me? Being a stand-up comic, you already come from a background that's probably pretty destructive.
Sure.
And you don't really have the emotional and social tools built at a high level yet to understand your surroundings and be appreciative of things. Obviously, we've proven that in the last 29 minutes.
Right.
But then you're also put in a position where it is literally you against the audience. Until you get them, they're against you. Whether you like it or not,
that's
really what it is.
Yeah, that's
And that creates so many different emotions in you. And then when you get off stage, you forget about the high you just had. Because now you're thinking, like, what I just did up there. Like, say you kill what I just did up there. And this guy's getting this, and this person got
that,
and I'm over here, and I'm playing this fucking club.
Yeah, now the celebration is...
You know that guy from Godfather. Hey, get the hell out of here. I ain't no band leader.
I had him all over the world. She was the greatest piece of ass I ever had, and I had him all over the world.
I heard that story.
Yeah. Oh, I ain't no band leader. But yeah, you're right. The thing is about a comedian is what's... Funny things are negative. Negative things are funny. That's where comedy comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So our minds are trained to do that. Now, unfortunately, it's like you can't turn that off. It's like, you know, working out. You can't just, when you take steroids, like you're not just muscular when you're on a football field. You are now muscular all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you're right. That I just killed, which should be like a great feeling. Like I took these people, these strangers, and I made them all make one sound at the same time because of me and my ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But instead you go, how come this doesn't mean I'm on Letterman? How come this doesn't mean I got my own sitcom? This is bullshit. So even when you're positive, your instinct is to take that and then somehow fuel the negative. It's a negative gasoline.
Yeah, funneling it into the right tank. That is the trick. If we, you know, because at the end of the day, it's a cliche, but it really does ring true with us, especially, you know, specifically you and I, but also I think comics in general. We are our own worst enemies because there's a lot of stuff that we could be doing with that energy because we're talented that could probably end up helping us get to where we're complaining about we're not at.
Sure, yeah.
And that's what I'm slowly but surely figuring out for myself is I can channel this in a certain place. I could probably, it's almost like that, like there's like that fork in the road is not as, like it's not as severe as people make it, right, for this, but it's like, wow, if I just move right instead of left here, let's see what happens. And then you do it and you're like, oh shit, oh, I could do that. Okay, cool. Like, you know, I think it's hard to get there though mentally for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's also a business that's filled with rejection. Any showbiz aspect is built on rejection.
But at the same time, a lot more power is put into our hands now because of
social
media.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hate social media, but the one good thing about it is that there is a lot of power put in your hands and you don't need a lot of things to make it happen.
Just, that's another avenue where, because it's just another avenue of, how come my video, this video that's really good, only got 100 views and this fucking Chewbacca whore, or whatever her name is, Chewbacca mom, it's a half a billion. And you get that it's a freak show, but even then it's like, some, you know, some, that Indian chick who does, like, those YouTube videos, like, they're, you know, it's like, what's so great about these? But it's because it hits a niche.
Yeah.
So it just becomes another level of, like, competition. Like, how come I'm not viral? What the fuck?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like, is, you realize, you, if you're not doing things that, I've seen your work, you're doing actual sketch work.
Yeah.
No one's, that's not, one, from a time limit perspective alone, it's not going to go viral. Things that go viral are like one or 2 minutes, and they don't have heavy dialogue or a point, or you have to listen.
Well, I
want to
make our short films.
It's good. All you got to care about is being good, all right? You got to accept sometimes that what you like. I mean, Harry and I sit in a car sometimes, sit in a club, and we'll talk about things that are 40 years ago that we know, and like the minute details of it all. The minutiae turns us on about how the Beatles wrote this song, or how Springsteen did this concert. Like, we talk about art in a way that is so intricate and, like, the trivial. Like, it's the smallest detail we know. So we're into stuff that requires you to build from the ground up and understand it. That's not appreciated now.
No.
So it's pointless for us to beat ourselves up.
Damn, Daniel.
We're not fucking, I'm telling you right now, if you're 24 and you're listening to this, you're way ahead of your years, because anyone under like 28, I really don't want to have a conversation with, because your head is so far up the ass of social media that you've been brainwashed. Nothing is very good. It's a lot of quick. It's a lot of quick and easy. And I get, like, that's the name of the game right now, quick and easy. But you're not going to understand me when I want to put something out, usually.
Right,
it's going to be a very small audience, and I'm okay with that. Depends.
It's a beautiful balance of more.
But it's coming around, dude. Everything comes back around, right?
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm on the right side of this thing, like I said at the top of the show, and I keep what I'm doing and add the elements in that are current. I'm not saying that I don't want to roll with the change. I like, there's some great changes out there. There's some great uses of social media, great uses of film now, because a lot more people can buy cameras that are good and use that to make great art. I'm all about it, all right? It's the content I have a problem with. It's about being popular and being flashy and not about being good.
Yeah, but at the
end... You want to be good.
Yeah, but also at the end of the day, what do people still gravitate towards? Movies and TV shows. Like all these vines...
Movies, not anymore. TV. Movies
still
now...
Still going out to see movies.
Well, when's the...
Was the last
case
time?
In point.
Okay.
Could Godfather be made today?
Oh, no.
No.
No, they wouldn't make Godfather today.
It's the greatest movie of all time. Could not be made today if someone
sure,
went in
yeah.
to go,
yeah.
hey, this is the movie. It's a 3-hour thing about this Italian mob family. Well, what happens? And then
it's just
watch The Godfather. It is considered by probably anyone who's anyone that it's probably one of the top 5 greatest movies of all time.
Yeah,
and now I get it. Citizen Kane is a fucking struggle to get through, and that's considered the greatest movie of all time. So I get that times change. What's good is different. Tastes become different. But I don't think our tastes have evolved so much further that The Godfather still isn't considered one of the greatest movies of all time.
But then TV is getting very...
TV is amazing now. Amazing now. TV is the new format,
because
in my opinion.
Because that's where they all went to tell long stories. Yep. That's where the really talented people went to tell long-form stories.
To bring up Outliers again for the 50th time in the show, that's what
that's
book's about.
Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah. It funnels in... like. It's all about, so they're not going to greenlight any great movies really anymore that tell this story, that have these great characters that are rich and developed. So let's go to TV. Right. And they discovered how to do that. So thank you, David Chase. Thank you for making Sopranos. Thank you, David Simon. Thank you for making The Wire. I want to thank all of you, David Milch, for making Deadwood, because you're the reason why TV's so incredible now.
Yeah.
Because you put out a body of work that is like one long film.
But that's the... finding the positivity and all the negative bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. That's
what
we're doing. We got to do.
We keep going back and forth. We are so positive, yin and yang, negative, positive at any given point. So now I'm going to be positive, which is, TV has never been better. There's never been more options. Now it's like, there was a time it was three networks, and even when there weren't three, even when it was like cable, that was all bullshit. No one really kept programming after 9 p.m., let's be honest. It was all...
This
nonsense.
Is fairly recent, too.
Yeah.
It's like 20, 25 years ago.
So now, TV, for as much as, it's Big Bang Theory, which I hate, and I hate the three-camera sitcom. Like, I think Carmichael's doing a good show, but other than that, the three-camera sitcom to me is just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Four cameras now, whatever.
Yeah.
I just think it's just, they're just terrible. And then at the same time, now they're doing other things. Like, now TV, even though it's the internet now, just so many more options for really great shows. It's better than it's ever been in a weird way. There's more options of really incredible stuff. And so that's the positive. The negative negative is like, there's a lot of YouTube like bullshit. There's a lot of Vine bullshit. But with that comes Netflix and Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're creating all this original content. So it all...
Everyone
all
has
cyclical,
their evil stepbrother, man. You know what I mean? Any big thing that's a good move always spawns some evil cousins, you know what I mean? And I get it, and I take the good with the bad. I'm not complaining about that. I want everyone, seriously, I want everyone that's out there making content, I want there to be room for everyone. The problem is, there so far has been no room for me, no room for you. And not because we're not working hard, we just haven't really found that part of the audience yet. We haven't got that right boost. We haven't got that right... Maybe an article picks it up and writes about, this guy's making great stuff. These are the things that get people onto your shit, because at the end of the day, if you can get a couple of those, people are more sheeps now than they've ever been with popularity.
Right.
Anything that resembles popularity, if we had a tweet from a couple major publications that go, two guys working hard, making indie projects look cool again.
Right.
People aren't going to read the article, but they're going to retweet it and like it because they follow the publication. So if we can get on board with a couple people that go, I want to put this out there. People will follow in droves. They'll fucking be, I'm all about your guys' work. You don't know shit about my work, but you want to be part of the cool kids.
The other thing is, I don't think that most people in the business pay attention to the actual work.
No, it's about clicks and views and follows.
A couple people here and there will go, I really believe in this work. But those are exceptions.
Those are pioneers, man. Like the Weinstein Company, those guys always are out there trying to find great work. They very rarely let me down when it comes to a project.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing great work out there, and that's what they pride themselves on. HBO, for a long time, kind of held that torch, man, and they have a lot
they're
of competition.
Still doing great
program, they
yeah.
are, but they
but
have
now,
a lot of competition
now
because Netflix is throwing their hat in that ring too, Amazon.
I mean, Woody Allen's doing technically what's considered a series. He's never done a series.
Yeah, because that's,
at
he knows,
age,
this time.
Whatever, I don't know how old he is.
In his 70s.
In his 70s, he's just now doing a series.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nuts when you think about it, you know?
It's really exciting times, and I feel like for the first time, it's really built for what I am good at and what I want to do. But like I said, if we can get a couple people on board, that's all it really takes.
Maybe that just takes time.
Get people talking. I mean, I was listening to Corden on James Corden, who does that carpool karaoke shit, which is amazing for his career.
Right.
And he was on Stern, and I was listening to his interview, and he said something really interesting. He goes, I know a lot of people don't watch my show, so I don't even pay attention. I couldn't even tell you my views. I couldn't even tell you my Nielsen rating. But what I can tell you is that I have, you know, X amount of millions of subscribers on the YouTube page. And that's what the show really thrives on, is that. That's what we care about. Because in our opinion, that's something you can, you have to go find, you click on it, and you watch it. And that's, that, that's our real fan base there. That's, they're right there watching that. And that's kind of where we're coming from. And literally the guy, there are rumors that he's going to take over for Colbert. And it has zero to do with his rating, everything to do with the fact that he is built this viral presence.
Is he doing that well
presence.
Virally? I had no clue.
Oh my God. The Adele video alone has 500 million.
500 million?
Views.
Wow.
The Bieber one has like 150.
Yeah, but see, this is... Now we're getting... Now I'll swing back to negative. This is the problem is... I've seen James Corden's show, and he does a fine show. I'm not shitting on his show. It's all right. But Colbert does an amazing show. But
I understand that Colbert is smarter, he's a better host, but I don't understand why they would put the guy in a position to where he's not that character. People want to see that character. Yeah. I'm not saying they should have done that, but
he's still technically...
I don't find his show that great.
He's still doing... I think those pieces, when you really watch them, the political pieces, he just really breaks them down. The same way he did on the show. He's just not calling himself a character, but he's still reading. The
guy's super talented. He's beloved
sarcasm,
by the pseudo-intellectual
crowd.
But what
I'm saying is this. Overall, if you go by the overall score at the end of the fight between, let's say, Colbert and James Corden, Colbert's show is much better. It's significantly better.
Corden, I'm not disagreeing with you.
He's still finding his voice. He's, you know, it's only been, whatever, a year or so that he's...
But look at Fallon. Fallon has built an empire off of being viral. And I think Fallon is a terrible interviewer. I don't think he's a very good interviewer. I think he's also a guy that understands what his audience is. And his audience is like, hey, and what his talents are. He's super charismatic. He loves timeless work like Springsteen and that Saved by the Bell thing and all the things he's done. And he's really good at making bits that people aren't watching in the moment. They're fucking going on their computers. They're logging in. They're downloading. They're fucking whatever, clicking, whatever you guys say. And he's doing a great job. And that's all Corden's doing. Now, granted, he's kind of a one-trick pony because it's just that carpal karaoke thing you're going off of.
Right.
So I see your point.
Yeah.
That, hey, he's done one viral...
So now they're going to be like, hey, he should take over.
But now we're asking the devil to have a fucking heart and to have some taste.
Right.
The devil doesn't have any taste. Right. It's like, oh, this guy gets 500 million views on videos, maybe we should be moving him into a time slot that makes us the most money, and that would be that time slot we gave to Colbert. I'm not even saying it's going to happen, but that's what's rumored.
Yeah, I mean,
the same thing they did to Conan, and they're like, hey, we think Leno gets better ratings than you. People would rather watch him. He appeals to more people. You appeal to really intelligent people. There's not a lot of them in this country, okay? So we need to get Leno back, and they fuck the guy over. I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, yeah, but again, it's open. Everything's open.
But at least you got a shot, right?
Sure, yeah.
We cannot complain that we don't have a shot, because then that's our fault.
Well, now the whole thing for me is I just want all this work to be seen. I've written so much stuff that I just never got a chance because I'm like, I don't want to put a one-man show together because I don't think anyone will show up.
I think that's a defeatist attitude, though. I don't think you should...
It is, but it's also based on the times I did a one-man show and nobody showed up.
Well, yeah. I mean, at the same time, like...
So it's not based on nothing.
You have a show.
Now it's probably going to be different.
You get 100,000 downloads a month on your show.
Yes. And now
your voice is heard
by
a lot of people. So why not focus on a project for 3 months, like a one-man show?
Yeah, yeah.
Do two nights of it. Film it and then just submit it. You can get 40 people in a fucking room.
Oh sure, yeah.
Dude.
Now I can, and that's the
plan.
So
do it.
That's the plan. Yeah, that's the plan. But for a while, it was a lot of like, you know, I'll put a lot of work into this. It sucks when you put a lot of work into something and only a couple people see it.
But
now it's
why,
easier
though?
To do it in video.
But why?
Why?
Why does it suck that you worked really hard on something you think it's good?
Well, I'm speaking. Generally,
people showing up is on you.
Yes,
if you don't have a fan base, are two a lot of friends that want to come, then okay.
Yeah,
they say
they'll come. That's the thing. I also, you know, I've, in my experience, again, it's going to be different because I think now I'm in a place because of the podcast, and I can probably put a show together, and that's my plan now.
Mm-hmm.
The videos, I mean, it's disappointing, but at least there's that video. I have it. I don't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
That I have, like, I can just show this to people when I show it, and I've done it. It's great, and I can send it out.
I mean, all those things become part of the portfolio. So
sure,
that
I'm fine with. But to perform in front of an audience, you need the audience there. Again, that's where it comes to be like, Okay, I need the audience there.
So you're the kid that doesn't want to throw a party because you're afraid no one's going to show up.
I still won't throw a birthday party.
You're scared no one's going to show up.
But people won't, and it's not out of malice. It's not that I don't have any friends. It's people's lives are very busy, and
well, it's like
I'm not going to throw a party that I planned for 100 people and 10 people show up.
Yeah, because you're like, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I feel that way at times too, where I go, oh, well, you know, I'm not the guy that people would run to his party, but maybe I am.
Well, I don't know. You did a one-man show that I directed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people came out.
Yeah.
For it.
A lot of people came out.
Beloved.
Yeah.
Beloved. Or Beloved, however you want to. Which is not the name of your one-man show. But.
Beloved.
Beloved.
My Beloved.
I always also like a one-man show where they go with a controversial title like, Faggot, the one-man show. I saw one poster for Nigger, a one-man show. Like, all right.
The odds are this is not going to be particularly crazy.
Yeah.
The most exciting part of your show is the
title and the poster. Faggot! A one exclamation point, a one-man show.
I think all those things are capable.
Now I am. Now I am because okay. I have the podcast. But there was some legitimacy to it.
I get it. We're like, okay, you know, why am I going to do this if I think I can only get in 10 people? Or unless you go, fuck it, I need to do this. I need to get this out. I need to work it out. So if I have to do it in front of 10 people, I'll find a room with 10 people that doesn't look bad with 10 people.
It doesn't work for me with 10 people. It just never has. I don't know why.
It's a hard sell to be in front of 10 people. But
it's hard to be.
You'll do stand in front of 10 people all the time.
Yes, and that doesn't always go as well as you want it to. It probably goes as well as 10 people being in a room. But also the stand-up is... It's not usually my thing when I do it in front of 10 people. It's the club's thing. It's never like everyone in my life to come out.
So you're saying it's a far deeper thing.
Yeah, it's headlining.
It's you. It's something you're, like you said, it's a party you're throwing. And if no one shows up, it's saying a lot more about who you are.
Sure, yeah.
And that's the part that makes you sad.
And it's also an hour of me, which is difficult. I don't think I've done an hour in front of 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
I've done, you know, like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe sometimes even 30 I've done in front of 10 people. But it's also stand-up. You can fuck around. When you have this show that you're not going to deviate from.
Yeah.
It's 10 people is a rough thing, especially it's a weird combination when you do the type of shows I do because you're still supposed to connect to the audience. Like when you do a play, I think it still feels awkward when there's 10 people, but
I think
at least
York,
you never
though,
break the wall anyway. So.
I see what you're saying, but I also, to the other hand of it all, New York City, people put shows on for two people. So I'm not saying that's ideal, but obviously I see your point. You're like, hey, I want to make this thing a big event, and I just can't pull in the numbers. I get it. All right, so I'm feeling great now. It's a good chat.
I feel better now.
It's a good one, right?
Chat. Yeah, it was fun. I don't know if it was particularly funny to listen to. I don't know.
I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was more cathartic. We talked very. There's nothing I think less funny than two comedians talking about comedy.
There's nutrition in there, though, for everybody.
Oh, sure.
That applies to everyone. Look around your life and find out what's good about it, because I feel like a lot of people, no matter what their position is, whether it's the arts or not, are feeling that. I think our status in the world right now, especially in America, no one feels really good about anything.
It's hard.
It's weird.
It's hard. Well, I mean,
it's very lethargic.
It's because this country's in a bad situation.
It really
There's
is.
No middle class. And not to get into politics, but I guess we'll have to get into politics.
It's tough. It's a tough place to be for everybody. No matter who you identify with politically, it's tough out there for everyone, and it's very separatist. Not a lot of people are coming together. So, of course, if you don't have a community, you don't feel like you're a part of something, or things are feeding you and giving you good things, you're going to be going through what we're going through.
Yeah.
We're going through this because we picked a line of work that isn't very stable.
But plenty of people.
But you're out there feeling it when you're like, I'm not trying to be a famous comic. I'm just trying to fucking find a job, go to work, have a family, be able to take them on a vacation once a year maybe. I can't do that.
Yeah. That's a tough.
You got it's real all, problems, you know?
It's all tough, and with the exception of a handful of people, you know, whatever, among the millions who have everything. But even they're not happy, though. That's the other beauty is
they're only happy by making you miserable, by stealing your money out of your pocket and putting it in theirs. That's the only. Them making more money, that's the only thing that brings them any joy.
Even then, they're just like, what is this? I wanted crystals or whatever. Whatever rich people get. I wanted these glasses to be crystal. What is this? How am I supposed to drink my.
I wanted agave.
Yeah.
What is I wanted agave in my drink.
What is this bullshit? Get it out of here. Like, they're still miserable, too. Like, you know, so it's not... It's you're only as happy as you can make yourself be, and that's the struggle.
And that's the point.
Can we end with what happened yesterday? What was the greatest thing we ever saw yesterday?
So, to bring it all together for you guys, it's about the little things. And yesterday, we went out with some women who knew someone that owned a quote-unquote nightclub here in Hartford, which... It seemed like it could be a good time, but it was one of those, like, three-floor structures where there's a different kind of party on every floor.
It reminds me of that Bruce Lee movie where he's got to fight his way through each level, like, the levels of death or whatever.
And it's every, like, city, like, Hartford I go to, and there's a million of them that look and are, like, Hartford, like, tons of cities in Detroit and in the surrounding areas and in different places in the Midwest I've been, like Kansas, where they always have that club that's the all-purpose club, like every floor. Cigar bar, a vodka bar. Yeah. What
Dance
do we need
club,
all this shit for?
And then S&M in the basement, whatever.
So we go to this place with these like five or six women, and they're nice. They're like, they're getting loose for someone's birthday. So they're at the show. They were very nice to us. They wanted to bring us out. So me and Harry went. And this one woman who is the loudest woman out of them all, who happens to be a vice principal.
Is that true?
Yeah. And she was the loudest out of all the eight women. And that was that's pretty impressive because...
they were all loud.
It was like the Hall of Fame of yellers. She decides... Now, keep in mind, it's an empty bar. And we're at the part of the bar, the first floor, where it's very well lit. So it's not even like...
This is like right within 5 feet
of the
entrance.
Front door, yeah. So it's not even like the ambiance is set for it to be set off or turned up, as you guys say. I mean...
And there's some music playing, some, you know...
It's a fucking baseball game on or something. Like,
yeah, the basketball
game. It's a
sports
bar. So we're in the sports bar section of the bar, and she decides... I need to dance on this bar. Now, keep in mind, she's wearing like one of those long sundress type dresses. She's not wearing like a short mini dancing skirt or jeans and heels. She's wearing like some platform wedges or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I just contradicted the shoe, but whatever, like a wedge type shoe. And she needs to get on this bar.
I don't know what she was doing. I just see her hiking up her dress.
She's hiking up because she's wearing this long summer type dress.
Yeah.
That I don't know if you would wear that at night. I feel like only in the day women wear that. Anyways, so she's hiking it up. She stands on the stool. And, of course, one of the other girls think it's a great idea, too. So they help her up there.
Sure.
And all of a sudden...
She tries to... She never really caught her balance.
She gets to the bar. And I feel like, now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like she was so drunk, she thought she was walking along the bar, but was walking across the bar.
No. I'll tell you what happened. She got up there. First of all, she's drunk. She's wearing wedges. It's also an unnatural, like, she's got to step on the seat and then step onto the bar. It's high.
Yeah.
And then, like, she's kind of trying to get her footing. And there's, like, a sign above one of those weird things, like, whatever. It's like a cardboard sign, but it's hanging. What, a plastic sign or something.
Yeah.
So she kind of nudges it and kind of with her head, and she's kind of, like, never, this is all almost in one motion. She never really got her footing. And then you just see her, like, lean over.
I know what happened. She stepped on the long containers they have that have the garnish in it, thinking it was part of the bar. So she stepped on the lemon wedges, and she
started to tilt. She tilted, and in a way you're like, all right, if she catches, you know, you do the thing with your arm.
I think she's going to catch herself. And... Then, she fucking swan dived at an extreme rate, face plant over the bar and hit her head and face into a set of pint glasses. Shit's falling everywhere. And she just, it was almost like she was eviscerated into the floor. Because she, almost like the bar went down three levels because the way she dropped out of sight so quickly.
Couldn't see her. And she did not get up, she didn't hop right back up.
No, it was a... I'm holding it in because I think she could be... In my mind, I'm like, she could be dead. Like, we gotta call 911.
And they're like, I guess they're not gonna cancel the comedy show, right? This is unrelated to it. It didn't happen in the bar of the comedy show, so the show's still on.
We're still gonna get paid.
We're still gonna get paid. But all I envisioned, I didn't think... I thought, like, oh, shit, she's gonna be dead. Or worse comes to worse, we're gonna see her being weird. Like, cut to 5 minutes later, her with a neck brace on. And just, like, crying, like, I didn't know, oh, my God. And my favorite, the DJ turns down the music.
Oh, yeah, like, this is how hard she fell. Everything went quiet. This bar has 7 levels of different DJs. That's 7 different DJs playing their music for 7 people at the full volume. She face planted so hard. Everything stopped. Everything stopped. The guy stopped playing music. And I want to laugh because I think we're going to have to call 911. I'm not a mean spirit necessarily, but don't get on the bar. I hate when women get on the bar. It was like the perfect storm of that's what you get scenario. Dead grandfather was like, see, that's what you get. Like, that was his favorite phrase. But she gets up and is just embarrassed. No, like, bleeding. I laughed. I looked at Harry and I had to turn our heads because this woman's whole family's around us. So we got to be like kind of cool about it. Yeah. Your fucking mom's there.
Yeah.
And oh, it was amazing.
Oh, fuck. Once she was alive, the amount of laughing. Because there was a moment there I'm like, oh, she could be dead. Because to me, you said she went face first. I remember seeing her go head first backwards is what I, or maybe no, to the no, side. No.
It was kind of sideways, but her face took the brunt.
But she had no bruise on, nothing that
I think
saw.
Today she might be hurting.
She's going to be hurting, but I mean, there wasn't any like, I just heard glasses cracking.
Yeah, I thought her nose was going to be broken.
I thought we were going to see her being wheeled out with just streams of blood on the top of her head, like by her face, and having to be escorted on that, like, you know, that city, the city stretcher, the stretcher where they have you seated up type of deal, where they're going to have the blanket over her legs and just like...
Dude, I thought she could have been really fucked up.
Yeah, it could have been bad. I mean, she could have broken her neck.
Because the speed.
Fact that she didn't, yeah.
I mean, her body, maybe she got lucky she was drunk. It's like that drunk driver thing where their body's so loose that they don't die in the car crash, but they kill everybody else.
Just her arms.
Oh.
Like doing the thing like when you try to kick somebody off a boat in a cartoon and they're just, she did everything but like wiggle her feet in the air in a running motion and just,
that's amazing. Plug where you're at.
You can go to, my website is ihatecomedy.com. That's the name of my website. You can find all my information. I do hate it in some aspects. But the big thing is the Beige Phillip podcast, the Beige Phillip show. It's a relationship sex advice show we do for guys' perspectives. It's a funny show. It's informative. If you're having relationship troubles, dating, single, married, whatever. Dante is an amazing relationship expert. Dante Nero, the host of the show. It's super fun. We've had Josh on a couple times. If you want to find Josh's episode, listen to that one. Start with that one.
Yeah,
those
are
fun shows.
Good show. I really lay it out there.
The dating on set stuff that we're working on.
Yeah.
Check that
That's
out.
That's right. Dating on set. Don't forget. We're working on something new, too. It's coming down the pike. A new web series. We'll have more info when that comes to fruition. And to that lady, if you're listening out there, who face planted, fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You're awesome. All right, guys. Thanks, Harry. I love you, man.
Love you, brother.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Harry. I want to thank Harry Trajanian. You're the good man. You're the good man doing the good thing on a good show. So make sure you guys go out there and you follow Harry on all of the social media. Also, we do a lot of work together, so if you're following me, you definitely should follow him. They're kind of our two bridges that... Hold on. It's the... he is the bridge. We... Fuck. The social media is the bridge that brings it all together since we work together so much. That's what I'm trying to say. Took me a minute, but I said it. You could always find me at Josh Ricardo. I'm also joshricardo.com. And the show has a Twitter and an Instagram called @SlamPigPodcast. So make sure you guys follow those because you get to see pictures of our guests as well as other fun stuff. And I've been on the Artie Lang show a lot. So if any of you... followed me from the Artie Lang show. Thank you so much. Artie's been very good to me lately, and it's been great being on his show, and the fans have been really nice. So if you're a fan from Artie Lang that found me and now you're listening to my show, thank you so much for tuning in. And please, all of you, you can always email me slampigpodcast@gmail.com, and I will answer all of your emails. I head out to San Diego, California to do some shows, as well as I have a personal engagement I have to attend, which should bring back many interesting things from this thing. So I want you guys to do me a favor and have a really amazing week. I want you to attempt to make someone's world a little bit better, a little bit bigger. But that's after you take care of yourself, all right? It sounds really preachy, but at the end of the day, if there's one thing I've realized in this this dirty path of life, is if you don't take care of yourself, then there really is no reason to try to take care of anybody else, because you're going to be really bad at doing it. So, if you take anything away from me today, that would be it. Enjoy the rest of your week, and thank you again for listening. Drink to my head.